What's going on, everyone? It's Rob and Johnny. Welcome to episode 43 of the MM Arcade Podcast. I sound terrible, don't I? I can hear it right now.
Yeah, a little rough around the edges. But honestly, that was like me for like the first 3 months of this year.
Or yeah, I remember.
4 months of this year.
Well, now I've got whatever you had. But Rob, today's been a crazy day. We had UFC 302. We're going to do a bit of a recap. But also as well, we are going to talk about your situation and your fight because you fly out this coming week, right? It's come around so quickly. What the hell?
It has. And you know what? I say fights always come around quickly because I'm always kind of looking, like I'm always counting down the weeks before the fight.
Yeah.
And so I'm always kind of pushing the envelope and not seeing a lot of the weeks before it's fight day. So weeks, like fights come faster than they seem. But I don't know, this one's crept up on us. I'm leaving this weekend. Everything's in place. I feel great. I'm moving well. Last week of some hard work before hop on a plane and zone out for a little bit, play some video games and get to work.
Hell yeah, dude. Well, we're going to be talking about that after we do our UFC 302 recap. So if you are new, please hit the like button, subscribe, and let's get right into it. So we just pretty much got done watching UFC 302. By the way, I apologize for my voice. I'm pretty sick at the moment.
Minutes ago.
Let's talk about the main event, Islam Makhachev defeating Dustin Poirier by submission, Das Choke in the fifth round. Rob, what were your thoughts on that fight?
Well, I want to start with saying I think that was one of the more exciting title fights that we've seen for a long time. You know what I mean?
I thought,
first round, I thought we were going to see another kind of Khabib Poirier moment. I thought we were going to see Makhachev just go in, take him down and control him the way Khabib did. But we didn't see that. Poirier brought dog and you saw the fight he brought. I gave every round to Makhachev, okay? I thought he was winning the stand-up battles. I think he was getting hit and there were some tit-for-tat sort of moments, but I thought he was winning the stand-up battles for the majority. I thought he was obviously winning the grappling exchanges. Dustin did a really good job of stuffing some takedowns and defending the takedowns. But when Makhachev got him down or got to further the position to his back or whatever, he obviously controlled the entire round.
Yeah.
But, mate, I just had a feeling every time they were standing, Poirier was dangerous.
Yeah. Dude, I thought there could have been a knockout punch or whatever. But the thing that I've always said about Makhachev is that he is a better striker than people give him credit for. And I think he showed that in this fight with Dustin because especially, I would say Dustin maybe won the fourth, but especially in those first three rounds, whenever they were standing up and trading, I agree, Dustin wasn't being the better striker like I thought he should have. Islam was showing how good he is on the stand-up, throwing his hands. So I was hoping that Dustin was able to come back and just get one in that really did hurt Makhachev. And he kind of did with that elbow, if you remember, that cut him open.
Yep,
but aside from those moments, Makhachev was actually better punching. It's crazy to say.
Yeah, and I'll say I think Poirier fought better in this fight than he did against Khabib.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%.
You know, I think Poirier learnt a lot from that Khabib fight. But, mate, I've said Makhachev, you know, is Khabib with better hands, and I don't think any fight proves that more than the last two he's had, like the last couple fights he's had, especially this fight because he outstruck Poirier, and Poirier like across five rounds, and then got a submission win against him. That's outstanding because Poirier, in my opinion, is one of the most dangerous tired strikers in the world. If you're tired and he's a little tired, he is the most dangerous striker in the world, I reckon. It is crazy. He finishes a lot of people in later in the rounds because of that reason, in my humble opinion, right? And Makhachev beat him there a lot of the rounds. I had him winning every round. I thought he was outstriking him in a lot of rounds. I understand there was a lot of significant strikes passed between both of them. There was a lot of tip to tap moments. Yeah. But, mate, it was great to watch. I thought that was such – like I said, I think, in my opinion, it was one of the better title fights we've seen in a long time, especially one where you know there's going to be a fair amount of grappling involved.
Yeah.
It was great to see. And to seal the deal, to wrap up the fight, Makhachev did get the Das, close the show. It was, and the way he did it, that transition, that single leg failed, reshot to a low single, to that drag out, mate, it was textbook. And
so Dustin was obviously doing really well defensively against the takedowns, maybe not so much in the first, but as the middle of the fight went on, and even in the fourth, he was doing really well at stuffing those takedowns. So the way that Makhachev took him down in the fifth round, I don't know what you call it, because I've never seen it like that before, where he grabbed his leg and kind of swung him around. That wasn't really textbook, was it? Like, even said that. You don't see that much.
That's straight up textbook wrestling. Like,
that was insane.
Like,
to
not
me.
MMA wrestling though. It's like on the mat, wrestling boots on wrestling, freestyle, open mat. It was just to transition into that during a fight off a takedown.
It was beautiful,
mate. And especially even his takedowns, his single legs with the sweeps, clean. His sag down single legs were just so clean.
Legs were so good.
They're pedigree in grappling, like MMA grappling, because it's not just wrestling, it's mixing the two, and it's just such high level. And then to have the striking he did, to be able to stand with Poirier and get the better of him for five rounds, seal the deal, unbelievable. Unbelievable champion, unbelievable fight. You know, one of the better title fights that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I was really impressed by him. And trying to look moving forward, what does Makhachev do? At the end, I think in his post-fight interview, he was talking about moving up in weight or something. But you have Armen Tsarukyan right there. I think they are going to have to fight next. He's going to have to do a few more fights in his division, in my opinion. What do you think about that fight as an early, early prediction, judging based on how we did in that fight against Dustin? How do you think he does against Armen?
I think he does great. I think he... Yeah. I think Poirier brought a certain X factor to the fight, especially with the amount of time. Like, how much was it between fights for Makhachev? I think.
Oh, it was a little bit.
It was January, wasn't it?
I'll pull it up now.
It was January when Volk fought him.
Actually, I think it turn out to be. No, I don't know if it was January.
I thought it was January.
It was October of last year. I remember. Yeah, was it? Because
okay. So he's had a bit of a lag between fights, which isn't not too long, but he's had a little bit of a gap.
Yeah,
and I don't. Yeah, I do think he needs to put in a bit of work. But from what we saw tonight, mate, I think he handles Tsarukyan not easily. I think it's a hard fight, but I think Poirier brought an X factor into this fight that Makhachev kind of respected, you know, gave gravity to, because Poirier was, you know, all or nothing. This was his last shot. Well, he was saying anyway, you never know what happens in the UFC, but, you know, that's the way he was treating it. And he's got knockout power, right? And he's a dangerous striker. So, I don't know. I can see him defending against Tsarukyan. I don't hate the idea of him going up to welterweight. Like, let's just say right today he fights Leon Edwards. I like that matchup.
I do as well.
for Makhachev. And obviously they're bigger guys. You can see he's got height on his side and he's a bigger, stronger dude. So I don't think he'd have any problem in the weight division as a whole. I'm curious. I think obviously winning opens doors, but so Rukin would have to be the next shot. But you know, we've seen crazier things.
100%. But speaking about Dustin, whether he fights again, he didn't exactly retire. In his post-fight interview, he said he was kind of leaning towards it, but didn't want to call it officially. Do you think he retires after this? Because this was his last chance, being real, to get another title shot.
What did he say in his post-fight interview? Because I didn't watch it.
It was kind of just like he didn't want to make 100% saying I'm retiring, but he was leaning towards that way. How many times is he going to have to go back up that mountain? He's talked about that a few times in interviews. It just feels like he's done. but he didn't want to say it because you never know what happens in 2 months' time. He might sing a different tune.
I feel like the atmosphere of the entire prep interleading to this fight was kind of that, you know, last note, that last song sort of thing. And I don't like that going into fighting to begin with because it introduces, I think, an element of weakness. You don't want anywhere near the fight game. You know, you kind of like banish it off like a vampire. DC actually said it better. He said that like it's the grass is always greener on the other side. You know, when you're grinding day after day, hour after hour, that the grass is always greener on the other side, you know, when you hit that retirement. And he said that in actuality, it's better than you could have ever imagined. You know, that level of comfort and pleasure you don't want in this game or anywhere near you right now. And I don't know. That's the atmosphere I had a lot. Like I was getting the vibe, I was getting the energy I was getting off Dustin, especially in the way everything was catered towards him exiting this fight, right?
I mean, his daughter was ringside like the first time ever.
I
think he said in the post-fight interview, he was like, what's the point of fighting again just for a random fight? You know what I mean? Like I think he might actually be done. He's just a little bit torn on how to announce it. Because we've seen how, you know, announcing your retirement in the ring is gone with Cejudo, for instance. If it doesn't stick, you never get that opportunity to do it properly again. So I get it.
Yeah. You don't know. I don't know what you
mean. Yeah, but moving forward, I think Makhachev against Sarukin is going to be a decent fight. Though after what we saw in this fight, Armin's going to have to bring a bit of a different game. Like the way that he won that fight against Oliveira was just being a dog, right? Mm-hmm. But I think Makhachev is got his number this time, especially because he's way better on the stand-up, he's way better with his hands. And I still think, even though he's improved since they first fought, however many years ago, I still think Makhachev is better on the ground as well. So let's see. But they might want to do the fight with Leon Edwards. They might want him to move up and do the money fight, you know?
Might not be Leon Edwards at that point, though. You don't know.
Ah, yes, might it will see. Be. I mean, look, I don't hate Bilal as much as a lot of other people do, but I still don't think Bilal gets the job done.
I don't know, dude. Like, I don't know. I'm not ruling it out.
Anything can happen. But
I'm not ruling it out.
Let's see. But let's talk about the co-main. I have a lot to say about this fight.
Yep.
Sean Strickland defeating Paulo Costa by split decision, which is insane. But he beats Paulo Costa over a 5-round co-main fight. Before I say anything, what do you think of this fight?
Please go first.
I thought this was very boring. It was a very boring fight. And I don't know who to blame. Do you blame Strickland for fighting the fight that he usually does, very similar to how he fought against Strickers, right? Or do you blame Paulo for not wanting to just stand there and trying to constantly move out of the way? It was just a boring fight. There weren't really any exciting moments aside from the I think it was the 5th round, right at the end, where there was a bit of a flurry there. But aside from that, it was just the same old thing for the 5 rounds. You know, Sean was just walking him down, throwing a lot of front kicks, using the jab, maybe threw another combination after that. And that was pretty much it, right? I don't want to see Sean fight Drickers again because it could just end up in the same way. It feels like even though Sean won, he didn't really learn anything about his fighting style and how to change it after the Drickers fight. Because if he does that against Drickers, he will probably lose again because you're always going to have those judges that take it the other way. Even though you might not agree with that judge giving it to Costa, that can happen when you fight like the way Sean does. Mm-hmm. He doesn't make it a definitive conclusion. You know what I mean? He's not, I don't know, man. It's just, he didn't change anything from Drickers. You know, you know what I mean?
And I think you said it best just at the end there. And I think the commentators also said it. He goes, he leaves it too close. Every round
way
is
too close. Yeah.
And that's why you lose some decisions you're confident in winning. That's why you can inch out wins sometimes, and that's why you inch out losses sometimes because you don't define the round enough. You don't do enough to make yourself the obvious winner of the round. And I don't think he's trying to do that. I think that's just his fight style. His fight style looks annoying as hell, dude. Like,
it does.
Mate, he looks like a kid, like when a brother and sister is like, I'm walking forward, and if you walk into it, it's your own fault sort of thing.
Yeah, it's
you
know what I mean? His ass.
with those teep kicks, just like rapid fire, one after the other, dude.
Yeah.
And Costa was on his bike the whole time. I think, you can't do that with Sean, be on your bike the entire fight, because you start to slow down. Sean started getting some really effective checks, and I think, like, Costa started the fight with two awesome leg kicks, and I feel like they impacted Sean right then and there. And then he slowed down a little bit, and he wasn't getting the timing off that he needed with his calf kicks and leg kicks. And then Sean started checking those kicks, and Sean checked a couple good ones. It looked like it hurt Costa a ton, and it changed the dynamic of that. It changed the dynamic of the fight almost instantly. And it wasn't a very exciting fight. The crowd were booing at a stage.
They were booing him every single round.
Yeah, well, Sean was just kind of just pressuring forward the whole time, and Costa was just on skates like the entire time.
But what happened to all that talk about, you know, we're going to go to war and bang for five rounds and Costa's cut from the same cloth and all that kind of stuff? Where was that energy? Because even Sean admitted it in his post-fight interview that it was a boring fight. Well, like, hold on. Yeah. You were there. Yeah. Do something about it.
It was just straight lies, dude.
Yeah. And I'm just like, if I'm Dana, like, a meritocracy or whatever, you give Sean a title rematch. But after that, I don't want to see him fight Drickus. I would rather see the winner of you or Khamzat fight in that fight.
Yeah, I think, I would like to think we're fighting for that spot regardless.
Well, no, he said that. I mean, Dana said that explicitly, so.
He did, but where does this Sean go from here? It's hard. Like, Sean's style is so hard because it's very hard to engage, but it's like you can't run away from it. It's a tricky style to get around, and I think Drickus did it best is that's how you fight him, is you press into him. You don't let him bully you and chase you around the whole time. You press into him. And Drickus took damage and took shots because of that. But that's, I think, the fight you need to be ready for to go forward. And I think Cannonier did it well against him as well. You need to give him, you need to make him respect you. You need to give him things to stop walking forward. Costa did none of that. Costa, I don't know. We didn't see much of Costa.
I was thinking about you when you were like, when I fought Costa, he was the best he's ever been. And then against Strickland, it fights like that. I mean, I'm sure you would have preferred to have that Paulo Costa than the one you got in your fight with him.
Yeah, you know, I would. But styles make fights. Maybe Sean just shut down Costa that hard. Costa couldn't do anything.
Mm.
But I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how to put it. I think five rounds, it was, for one, it was crazy. It was five rounds.
It shouldn't have been five rounds.
No, it shouldn't have been. It wasn't a title fight. It wasn't a main event. And the fact that it was only there's no way Costa needed to fight five rounds.
No.
He could have said, let's do three and had a much higher output in three instead of saving himself the way he did. That's the vibe I got from Costa the whole time, was just he was waiting, trying to pick him apart from the outside and saving himself for something that never eventuated.
No, I agree, because you kind of alluded to it. The times where he did get some good offense against Sean was when he moved into him and Sean wasn't just constantly walking him down, and he was working the kicks, he was working the body shots. But those were very far and few between, those instances, and I felt like it would have been a more exciting fight. I agree. In three rounds, where Costa's not thinking, I need to constantly pace myself against this dude, because give Sean credit, his stamina, his cardio is awesome. Mate. He's very, very efficient.
Yeah.
And it felt like he never got
He'll
tired.
He'll do 10.
He'll do 20.
He didn't even look tired at the end of the fifth.
Yeah. And I think we should address it, by the way, just because I don't like how the fight went and I didn't think it was exciting. That judge that called it against Sean, crazy, absolutely crazy. Right. Like, there is no way Paulo Costa, there's no way he won that fight 49-46. So that judge was insane.
I feel like that judge did that every fight. He's like, who are you two going with? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll go the other way. I feel like, there was one guy, because there were a couple other fights that were split decisions that shouldn't have been.
It was the same judge. It was David Torelli, I think it was. He called a stupid decision before and then another one here.
dude's just like not watching, like watching the fight through his phone on one of those stream sites. So it's like laggy and he can't see the fight clear.
But here's the thing. So I that was a stupid call, but I'll still say Sean's not doing himself any favors by fighting close rounds like that, because you can't, we know, like, even though it sucks, we know that there are stupid judges that will make crazy decisions. So you can't leave it up to them. Just like you did in the Drickus fight, you can't do what you did, because let's say there was just one other judge that was like David Torelli, you would have lost the fight. Even though you probably didn't deserve it, maybe like with Drickus, you still would have lost the fight. You can't leave it up like that.
Agreed.
No, no, no.
Agreed.
So let's see what happens. But I personally, I don't want to see Sean fight Drickus. But let's see what happens with your fight with Khamzat. Next, I want to talk about Kevin Holland defeating Mikhail Oleshchyk. I think that's how you pronounce it. By an armbar in the first round. After getting dropped too, I was really impressed. Did you like my pronunciation, by the way?
Yeah, look at you go, dude.
Dude, I'm sorry. I'm like so sick. So if my head is frazzled, if I'm stumbling, I apologize. But Rob, what did you think of that fight?
Mate, that was wild. Like, yeah, I'm going to call him Michael. I'm not doing it. Michael lands a killer overhand, drops Holland in the first, like drops him hard, goes in and doesn't address the position because he like almost fell into the armbar, but then chilled there for a while, started throwing hammers, fists and trying to punch from that position, didn't address the position at all, did not respect the position at all, did not respect Holland's jiu-jitsu at all.
Yeah.
And he gets armbarred. Like, Kevin pops the armbar on Michael, and this was a crazy part because Michael's arm was like busted up. It was like going the wrong way. It was what's it called? Hyperextending the opposite direction. Still no taps, no taps. And Herb Dean come in and broke it up. Because you know what? I was looking at it again because Herb Dean can stop fights for breaks and things like that. Like he's allowed to. He's done it before and he's allowed to. It's in the rules. But it kind of looks like when Herb Dean jumped in, it kind of looks like Michael was going for a tap or looking about to tap. You know what I mean? Like his hand was kind of open near the joint area-ish. It looked funny. And if I'm looking at it from the perspective of the ref, looks like he's about to tap. His arm's already the other way. I'm going to jump on it, you know, because you saw Michael, like when they got broken up, was upset. He was like, I was still in it, yada, yada, yada. But his arm went the wrong way.
Herb Dean definitely saved him, man. And there's arguments to say that I thought Herb could have called it earlier because at least with the benefit of the camera angle that we got, which was like top down, you could see part of the bone or whatever the hell it was poke out through the skin the other way. Your arm's not meant to move like that. As soon as that happened, where it looked like it was a clean break, Herb probably could have broken it up, but I think he left it for like 3 or 4 seconds after that. But the thing is, you can't listen to fighters in that situation. His arm was broken. He saved him from himself, in my opinion.
Yeah, like, makes you think, though, like, if it breaks and pops up and you're good with the pain, right, you can't get any more broken. You know,
but you could do more damage, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And you got like what, 13 minutes of a stand up fight with Kevin Holland with a busted arm.
Screw that.
You know? I don't know.
Yeah,
I know.
But honestly, I'm happy for Kevin Holland. It's good to see him come back. Though, I just want him to pick a freaking weight class. Just pick one. So you can start some sort of journey towards maybe a title fight. It feels like he's just agreeing to fights left, front, and center, which is great. We love that. But also, is there any direction for him right now? I don't know. It's a bit weird.
I do love the cowboy approach, and the fans like it, and the UFC like it. But
yeah,
I don't think it gives the necessary seriousness, like the gravity that you need to be fighting for a belt. I don't like the lackadaisical. Attitude towards I'll fight up, I'll fight down, I'll fight tomorrow, I'll fight next week. Like, what are you preparing for? How are you getting better if you don't know which division you fight in even? So, yeah, I don't, but that's Kevin Holland. That's what makes him exciting. That's why he slides into fights fight week that nobody thought he would, right? I don't know. Yeah. I just don't like the approach personally, but that's just me.
Same. But it is nice to see him come back after that loss against MVP, where it felt like he had no idea what to do. In this fight, he knew exactly what he was doing, and that was good to see. But those were the three big fights at the top of the card. But Rob, are there any other fights that you want to talk about at UFC 302, whether on the main card or the prelim, early prelim?
Yeah, there is. There is. I want to say congratulations to Jake Matthews. It's good to see an Aussie get up again, like to get back in the winning circle. It's I'm happy to see him get the W, and to as a fellow Aussie, watching Jake Matthews since he started when he was 19, young dude, but he fought a good hard fight, and congratulations to him. Did you see the other middleweight fight, Kopylov?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you think that Kopylov looked like a different fighter in the first round opposed to the second and third?
Yeah, I can see. Yeah, like, yeah, for sure. It was a good fight.
Yeah. I thought that first round, Kopylov looked insane. I thought he looked so good. He was moving well. He was so fast. And I think he was just doing a lot of the right things. And then round two, I don't know, dude. Like, Kopylov just dropped. Like, he's, I don't know. I don't know what happened. Let the other guy in. What was it?
Cesar Almeida. Yeah.
Yeah. Let him in back in that second round, and then like had to spam takedowns. Granted, Almeida's a great kickboxer, so I'm sure he has a lot of threat and whack in his punches and kicks, and maybe that was chipping away at him, but he had a great first round, great first round. I don't know. I think he's a good fighter, good prospect.
Fair enough.
You know, that's an observation I took.
No.
Sorry, it's Sunday. All my kids are around.
It's all good. It's all good, brother. Here's the one fight that I want to call out, because he finally did something. Jailton Almeida. He won by submission in the first round against Romanov.
I saw his win and I thought about you. I was like,
he finally did something. And don't get me wrong, when we got to that point, it was a bit boring. I, as soon as he took him down and did nothing, I was like, oh no, here we go again. I'm going to get on the podcast and start yelling at him. But then he got the submission. I'm like, that's what you're meant to do. Not just sit there and just plop there after the wrestle, but actually try and move into a submission and finish the fight. And he did it. Beautiful. I'll eat my words right now. Great job.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny, like the other guy did absolutely nothing. To defend the submission. It's like he didn't understand what a rear naked was.
He looked a little bit, I don't know if he was like in a full fight camp and he was training, but he looked a little bit out of shape.
And he submitted a lot of guys.
Yeah.
I don't know. But he was a good on Jailton. Good on him. You know, I don't know the guy personally,
but just I was very bored by his previous fights. I was very happy to see Blades do what he did. But you know what? This was a good showing, and I think he called out Cyril, and that is probably a good fight.
Could have for France. Mate, I'm interested in watching that fight.
Yeah, so. Because
if Jailton can get in close and get the takedown, Cyril's going to be in a world of trouble.
Hell yeah.
World of trouble. So,
yeah.
But then Cyril could knock him out before it reaches that point.
He could, but Cyril's weird, man. I don't know how. I'm very hot and cold on Cyril. He needs to fight, first of all. When's the last time that he bloody fought? I don't know how I feel about that, dude.
I agree. Like, he has moments of greatness and then he kind of has moments of not so greatness. But I think he's a really good fighter.
Yeah. Were there any other fights that you wanted to talk about before we move on to the next segment?
I'm trying to think. You know,
there was Nico Price.
I like Nico Price's resolve to get the fight. Yeah. A huge underdog going in there. And the other dude looked like he was hyperventilating the entire fight. Like,
dude, what the hell?
Nico Price looked like he was fighting in the arena. The other guy looked like he was fighting on top of a mountain. Dude's altitude was getting smashed. I don't know
what was going
altitude.
On with Morono.
He was
And
tired,
I don't remember
man.
Him being like that before. Like, it
wasn't
seems
a crazy
like this was a
output
one-off.
Either. It was like,
no.
And to see, it was weird to see it opposed from the fight before. I think the fight before was Kopylov, maybe.
The fight before was Randy Brown.
Randy Brown. And it was like such a different pace. Like, and then, I don't know. But I thought that was different as well. Sure. But I was happy for Price to get up.
Yeah. But overall, what did you think of UFC 302? I thought that the main event definitely saved it because that co-main was not good. I thought it would have been better three rounds. But before that, saw some nice fights, saw some nice finishes. So
it was an all right event. It was all right.
Yeah.
It was all right. I didn't hate my time.
Actually, when I say that, there was a lot of decision victories. Yeah, there was a lot of decision victories.
It was a long card. It felt like a long card. That last fight, though, made me happy, though, because it made it all worth it.
I want to call this out, by the way. Mickey Gall against Basil Hafez. Mickey came back pretty good. Like I don't mind Mickey. I thought he was much better on his hands. Basil is just a dog. I don't want him to go away, even though I think he's lost twice in a row now. So I didn't mind Mickey's performance, but he obviously lost because Basil's just a dog. Nice, like he's a nice up and comer as well. So let's see what happens with Basil after this. But that was UFC 302. Rob, let's talk about some of the fight notes because we should probably talk about your fight and your situation because you're about to fly overseas, right?
Yeah, I am next week.
Yeah. So is this our last episode before? Yeah, this week technically. Is this going to be our last episode before you leave?
I think so. I think so because obviously I leave this week trying to get the internet over there. It's a little tricky. I think you need VPNs and I don't know how that would work nice with Zencastr, yada, yada, yada. I don't think it's going to work. What I will do, though, is I'm going to do little snippets or video or updates or just of where I'm staying, what I'm doing, and I'll send them to you across the internet. And you can just somehow throw them up, throw some commentary over the top, see how it goes. But, yeah, unfortunately, guys, I did try to drag out the recording for as long as I could, this camp. But you saw in the last two or three weeks, it's been getting trickier and trickier to pin down a time and day during the week. Sometimes I've had to do it later in the week because I can't do it that days. And it's getting trickier and trickier until this week where we just straight up missed an episode. Yeah. And then I was like, yeah, going to have to just put it on hiatus for now, like until I get home at least. So, yeah, the week, I'm assuming I'll get back the week of, 303?
The week of Connor? Yeah. I think it's Connor and Chandler. So if you get back, we could probably do a predictions for that week, depending upon how you feel.
Let's see what state I'm in, but that's but yeah, unfortunately. So please hang around, guys. Please keep your interest. But I'll send some updates through. But you're gonna have to go on pause for 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's dude. We just want you to focus on your fight. It seems like training is going really well. So we're all with you and totally understand. But while we are here, while I have you, can you give me your quick predictions? I'm just going to rattle off a couple of fights for you because these are coming up in the next few weeks. Jared Cannonier against Nazarbayev Imamov. Who do you think is going to win that fight? Because Cannonier has been doing well, man.
Cannonier is solid. I'm always waiting for him to drop off, but he does it better. Yeah. He just gets better. So I'm going to go Cannonier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Next up, let's talk about. All right. This is on your card or your fight night, I should say. But this is the co-main, Sergey Pavlovich against Alexander Volkov. Sergey obviously coming off the loss against Aspinall, getting knocked out there. Volkov there with him. What do you reckon?
Tricky. I'm going to go Pavlovich just because. I don't know. I always end up going with the big hitters. There's something just like about raw power. That ability to change fights at the drop of a dime. But I'll do that for now. I understand he got chinned last fight, but
But he also got chinned against Tom Aspinall, right? And when you look at the quality of fighter that Volkov has fought recently, like I love Tai Tuivasa, but I think going from Tai to Pavlovich, different caliber of fighter. I'm leaning towards Pavlovich. I'm leaning towards him being hungry after losing against Aspinall and then him being right back into the – well, I don't know. I say being back into the title contention, but who the hell knows what's happening in the heavyweight division? I don't know anymore.
Yeah, that's strange.
I really don't know anymore. But do you want to talk a bit about your fight and how you're feeling about it, or we'll leave that up?
I'm feeling great. training's been really good, really, really good. I'm in top form. I think having the fight camps so close to each other and the fights so close to each other really lent itself to me starting this camp like multiple levels ahead of where I normally start camps. And I
nice.
Yeah, and my gas tank's bigger. My weight was lower. It's been a much better camp than the previous one.
Sick.
Obviously, there's been a lot of wrestling. there's no secret. There's been a lot of wrestling. So I expect him to come out wrestling heavy. He's got a good 1-2 down the pipe, but I'm preparing for those. I'm preparing for a striking fight. I'm preparing for a wrestling scramble. It's 5 rounds. My lungs are good. I'm expecting the best.
Did we talk about people not wanting you to touch gloves with him at the start of the fight?
Yeah, too many people.
Okay, all right. I just wanted to – I couldn't remember, so I wanted to leave that there. Too many
people. But I'm looking forward to the entire experience. I'm looking forward to going over there. We're staying in Dubai first for a while.
Nice.
And then we're going to make the transition over to Riyadh. So,
sweet.
Mate, I'm just looking forward to it. Traveling was one of the big allures of the UFC. It was one of the big highlights because you travel the world, you're an international fighter, you fight across the globe. And to be able to do that, to head to Saudi Arabia, to go there on a, like, yeah, I'm getting paid to go there and fight, man. I cannot wait. I cannot wait.
And then when you come back, you get to play Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree, coming out. I think it comes out the day before your fight. So I don't know how you're going to be able to not play it while you're over there, mate, if you don't have the time.
On my new computer as well. I got a new rig from Aftershock coming. And nice. I'm pretty sure it comes just before I leave, but I'm gonna
perfect.
Try to restrain myself and keep it in the box until I get home because
good play.
Yeah, it's gonna be special getting home.
Sick. Well, let's see what happens, but that was the UFC segment. Let's move on to the games news. It was an interesting week in the world of games. I don't know if you watched the PlayStation State of Play, Rob, but there was a few things that were announced. The highlights were Concord, which is like a 5v5 competitive hero shooter, kind of like Overwatch. People weren't too excited about that. We see PlayStation releasing more of their titles on PC with God of War, Ragnarok. There's Dynasty Warriors Origins. The devs behind Horizon and God of War as well are doing this RPG Souls-like called Ballad of Antara. Have you heard of that? I thought of you when I saw that one.
I haven't. And
it
I
might
feel
be
like,
up your alley.
I've got to see. I feel like the Souls-like label is getting thrown around a bit too loosely.
It is.
Today's day and age.
Yeah,
especially
but to
with
be
popularity
fair,
of Elden Ring. But
yeah, it not by the developer. Like this is other people trying to draw comparisons, you know, to describe it. But there's that. Until Dawn as well is coming to PS5 and PC. Silent Hill 2 getting a remake. And Astrobot, which is a new platformer in the vein of Super Mario. It's not Odyssey. I think it is Odyssey. That's probably the best comparison. Is there anything in there that interests you at all in this PlayStation State of Play?
No.
you're locked on Elden Ring, bro.
I am. And I've been jumping to a couple of games lately, but I'll wait till we've been playing lately. I've been throwing around games. So I'm trying to find a good game to play because when I go overseas, all I do is not eat much, train, and play games. That's literally all I do the entire time. Like, I mean like 12 hours a day gaming sessions. I'll be sitting at my computer the whole time.
That's crazy, man. You know, that is crazy.
It's not enough, in my opinion. It's not enough.
If only Shadow of the Erdtree came out just a week before, because I know that's all you'd be doing. That would be perfect timing.
I'm kind of glad it isn't, though, because I got, you know, I want to be into a game, but not too into a game.
Yeah,
plus,
I'm not really
I'm not in that phase right now. I'm not in the Souls-like phase. I want to play roguelikes, but I don't really feel like playing a Souls game right this second.
All right.
You know, I remember playing Dynasty Warriors when I was younger, though. I wouldn't hate jumping back into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the one game for me was probably Astrobot. It looks really bloody good, and it closed the show. I thought it was a really fun-looking game. Mm. Lots of different biomes, looked really colorful. They even have, like, you know, you can play as a PlayStation 5 and as a controller, and then there's Easter eggs from other PlayStation brands, like, you know, from God of War. So I think that game might actually be a sleeper hit, and I really like Super Mario Odyssey.
Is that the game that launched with the PS5?
Yeah, and that was like
you got it for free, like yeah, at the beginning. And that was more as like a shake it or blow on it.
Yeah, it was essentially.
My daughter loves that game.
Yeah, it wasn't really like a full game. It was like, hey, here's how the controller and the haptics and everything work, and we just want a bit of an experience to show you that. But this is a fully fledged game with Astro, so it looks like a lot of fun.
Sounds good. Like, no, it was a lot of fun. Like I said, my daughter loved it.
Yeah. No, I'm really looking forward to it. But that was pretty much it that was announced at the PlayStation State of Play. Next up, we have, after 3.5 years after launch, apparently there is not one single developer working on Cyberpunk 2077 at CD Projekt Red. They are done with the game. But they're saying that they might still do some updates like FSR3 coming to the game. But what do you think about this, Rob? They've moved on. They're working on the next Witcher. And I think they're also planning another Cyberpunk game. But what do you think about this?
Yeah, mate, they put in so much work to bring Cyberpunk back from its launch date. Yeah. And it is phenomenal now. It is such a good game. There is not enough hype and love and attention being brought to how good the game is right now. Mm. And I think it's a complete game. That's actually one of the games I'm thinking about jumping into over the next couple of weeks, maybe when I go away, because I still haven't played through Phantom Liberty.
Mm.
I haven't played through a lot of the new mechanics, a lot of the new skill trees. So, it might be a game I jump back into. But like when I last played Cyberpunk, which was just before the release of Phantom Liberty, it was amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. I didn't finish it, but I really enjoyed the start of Phantom Liberty. But I wanted to go back and do the original game because I never played it from start to finish. So it is, I think it's understandable that they finished off with the game because they want to do other stuff. And that game was a roller coaster for them. Understandably, a lot of it was on them launching the game in the state that it was. But the amount of hard work and time that would have went into that game after launch would have been insane. So I can understand why they're like, we're done. We don't really want to think about this game anymore. Let's move back to The Witcher and try something different. You know what I mean?
100%. Because it's been a crazy 3.5 years for them. Yeah. Like crazy.
Yeah. But they did it. They stuck to their word and they fixed the game. Yeah. And I think I do want to do a playthrough of Cyberpunk and I've just got to figure out a time. But that was the game's news for this week. Next up, what we're watching, playing, and reading. Rob, you were looking forward to this segment. What have you been watching, playing, and reading this week?
Well, I've been jumping around games, trying to find a game to really sink my teeth into over the next couple of weeks. And I tried jumping into Nightingale.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard of that? It's like a survival fave fantasy sort of game.
Okay.
Like base building. Mate, it's a good game. Like I enjoyed the way it looked. I love the graphics. I love the atmosphere, the environments. I thought it was gorgeous to play, but I'm just so burnt out from survival games. So
yeah, fair.
Games where you got to chop wood, get rocks, build a campfire, you know, I'm just sick of them. I think I did too much time on like the likes of Ark, Survival Evolved, Minecraft, Valheim, and any other. Like there was like a period where every game and its mate was a survival RPG. Like you had to punch trees for some stupid reason.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't get into it. I couldn't get into it. And the fact that it didn't have skill systems, like I'm really into building characters and building skill sets and things like that. And
that's
it doesn't
fair.
Have that. You kind of what you're wearing. And it didn't hook me. So I'm not playing that one. Then I tried jumping into, what's it called? No Rest for the Wicked.
Oh, yeah.
And I liked the combat. I liked the weighty feel of it. I didn't even I liked the art style. But again, there was another character. There was another game where I was like, got to farm a lot of resources to build things, to invest into things. I just don't know if I feel like playing a top down ARPG. You know what I mean?
That's fair.
Yeah, I'm in a bit of a ways, to be honest, in terms of to gaming. I want a game. All right, I want a game where you have like a little town. You go to it, you buy, you sell, you build, like and then you go back into a dungeon, and then you just go looting, fighting for as long as you can to get back out to buy, sell, and go back in. Like, I want that sort of loop. But if you die, you die. like
surely there's a game out there like that. Surely there is.
But I've played them all. That's the problem.
Oh, yeah, fair.
And, like, Rogue's Tale encapsulates this. Like, it's such a good game. It's so hardcore, and I love it. But I'm looking for something new up that vein. Like, remember I was talking about Baldur's Gate 3, and I got burnt out on story again. Big story games, I got further than last time, but big story games, I just get burnt out. And I'm just like, I don't care. And then I become kind of murder hobo. and then I'll have a moment of clarity where I've ruined my save, and I'm like, oh, man.
So do you think you'll ever pick up Baldur's Gate 3 again? Because it feels like you're done with it now. You've tried many times.
No, I've got the one playthrough. I've got the one playthrough that I'm playing, and I like the character still.
Yeah.
It is honor mode. I don't know if I like or don't like that, because what I realized, I really like it, to be honest, but I don't like how I can't make hard save points so that I can go back in time to go down a different route than I would have story-wise.
Yep, I agree with that.
But that doesn't really work with honor mode very much. But I don't want to play the game if it's not honor mode, because I'm a tryhard.
you're so stubborn when it comes to games, man.
So, dude, like, I'm in a bit of a lost space right now with the gaming. I'm gonna sit here and browse the Steam store for a long, hard time. In terms of watching, it's just the current season. Kaiju number 8's pretty fun.
I like Kaiju number 8.
All right. Yeah. Mushoku Tensei is a bit too slow for me, though. I don't know if all the other seasons were this slow, but this one's slow. It's killing me.
Yeah.
But Konosuba is just Konosuba. It's always funny. Mm. But Kaiju number 8 is good. I like it.
Yeah, that last episode was, I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but I love it when he turned. I'm talking spoilers. Yeah, if you haven't watched it,
Don't ruin it.
I'm not going to.
New one launched today. So I'm thinking.
Oh, there's another one today.
On that tonight. Yep.
Oh, tonight, hell yeah. So. I'll watch that with dinner. Hold on. I'm so excited.
I think that's,
But for me, I've been watching Kaiju number 8. I was watching a bit of Demon Slayer. I was watching a bit of My Hero Academia. So there's a few different anime that I'm watching at the moment in the current seasons, which I'm enjoying. And I mentioned to you the other podcast that I was reviewing Hellblade 2, Senua's Sacrifice. If you remember, that was the first game from Ninja Theory where it's very much like a cinematic, immersive audio experience where it's less video game and more movie, more experience, I guess. So I played the sequel and I definitely enjoyed it more than the first. The first very much felt like a slog. I'm not going to spoil it, but it was about her sacrifice and about her lover. But this one, it had more positive moments. It is gorgeous. Like, if you play that on with the HDR, it is probably one of the best looking games on the market, period. It just looks so damn good, like it's real life. I love the use of audio and how the voices are speaking to you in your each ear, and then behind you sometimes. That feels really cool. But it's not like your typical video game. You know what I mean? I don't think a lot of people are going to be naturally drawn to it. I don't think it's doing that well in terms of player numbers. For me, it's something that you try because it's something different, something unique. But yeah, at least it was better than the first, but I probably would never play it again. You know what I mean? I think it's a very unique niche game, and I struggled to see it succeeding more than it already is, you know? So it was fine. Yeah. Like, I don't know how I feel about it. I don't want to be too mean because they were trying something a little bit different. But Hellblade 2, I played and just been watching those animes. But I'm like you, Rob. I'm a bit of a rut at the moment with video gaming. I don't know, until Shadow of the Erdtree, I don't know what I want to jump back into. I was tempted to do a new Elden Ring playthrough with a new character on PC because I've been playing on PS5. But also that just sounds like a slog to get to, in 3 weeks, to get to, you know, Radahn and kill Moog and da-da-da-da-da to be ready for the DLC on PC as well. I don't know if I want to do that. So, mate, I just haven't been playing anything.
Take 10 seconds.
No.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, you reckon? There's a dude that can play the game naked with no weapons. Like,
yeah, but here's the thing.
You can go straight to the bosses.
Yeah, but I'm not that good at the game.
Believe in yourself. I believe in you.
No, I don't believe myself whatsoever. I need just like a really good build to carry me. But yeah, that's been it in terms of gaming for me and anime for me. But last section is viewer questions. Of course, if you have any viewer questions, let us know in the comments below. The first is from at MasterSpencer2483, who is a member, and we always try and prioritize member questions on the podcast. Question for Rob, what's the number one misconception about MMA fighters, particularly amongst non-fans of the sport? I really like this question.
Non-fans of the sport. Maybe that we're all thugs. You know, like we're kind of, I'd like to think that I'm relatively normal-ish outside of the octagon. And this is specifically because it says they're non-fans.
Yeah.
You know, I think like a lot of non-fans of the sport see the MMA as brutal and a bit violent because it's in an octagon and you know, you're fighting with all your limbs. But I think that's not the truth of it. I think it's more of a sport than they think it is.
No, I agree with that. I mean, I won't say names, but people have watched me watch MMA and they'll get like, oh, is that blood on the floor or on the canvas? Like, oh, this is a bit violent, whatever. And those kinds of thoughts and preconceptions kind of meld into what they think about the fighters, who outside of the ring are just normal dudes, right? Mm-hmm. But inside of the ring, it's a different story. But they're obviously professionals, and you know what I mean. So I totally get that one, because I've gotten that gist talking to people that aren't fans of MMA. Those that are kind of like, they dip in and out, they have more of an understanding. But particularly non-fans, I think a lot of them do think like that, which is a shame.
Yep.
But next question is from at MaximusA444. What's the most nostalgic games for you lads? I grew up on Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, Silent Hill 2, and Ratchet and Clank, and Jak and Daxter. Rob, nostalgic games for you?
Mate, Final Fantasy Tactics, Final Fantasy 8, Final Fantasy 10. Like, they were
straight off Final Fantasy for you.
I was big into Final Fantasy like through my early teens. Up until my late teens, like massive into it. So, that was my childhood in a nutshell.
No, I mean, for me, it was similar to Maximus. I played a hell of a lot of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask as well. It was because I was a Nintendo 64 kid. So those were the kinds of games that I played. Even, you know, Perfect Dark and GoldenEye and Mario Kart.
You know what? Pokemon Snap. Like that was
so good.
That was a game. That was so a game good. I spent too much time in. You know, Resident Evil 2, another game spent too much time in.
I think it really was dictated by what console that you had, because I never properly owned a Sega, so I never played any Sega games. At one stage, I eventually got a PlayStation, but mostly it was 64 for me that I played a lot of. Next question is from at Master Mirage. Hey, boys, question for Rob. But has he seen the UFC news that Khamzat is training with MVP? What are his thoughts on Khamzat training with someone with a karate background that also utilizes blitzes?
Mate, good on him.
It's an interesting mix. I didn't know MVP and Khamzat were friends or whatever. I don't know.
Good on him. MVP's got a very different style of fighting than
very different
everybody else.
Yeah.
Mine included. But good on him. You know, like, it's not like I'm not wrestling.
True. Yeah, that's fair. I can see why you would say that MVP has blitzes, but his fighting style is very different. Like, it's a completely different style of blitz to what you, for sure. I mean, the closest fighter to him is Wonderboy, and even between those two, MVP is very different, you know? So it's an interesting person to pick to train with for you. But anyways, at SteveOman123 asks, question for Johnny. You mentioned taking part in the dev of Fallout. I was curious if you could tell us more about that. It's a really hard question to answer because there's this big debate about if you're a community manager and you're involved in the social media side, are you technically a dev? Because no, I didn't code. I wasn't directly involved in the development of the game, but I submitted feedback reports and bugs and stuff to the community to the devs. I spoke a lot with the community, but I wasn't actively involved in like making decisions on Fallout and creating assets and stuff like that. So my job was more marketing and showcasing the game, but it wasn't necessarily active development, if that makes sense. But yeah, I thought I'd throw that in. And finally, at Foggy the Hippo, one for you, Rob. Across your training for fights and in general, what do you do as far as weightlifting and this and that strength and conditioning side of things? Are there specific muscles or exercises you focus on more for suiting MMA and or your style in MMA?
Not necessarily. I don't do a lot of weights during camps because, like, I get a lot of the contact work from wrestling and grappling and just hitting rounds. So a lot of that is muscular, and it kind of leans into what I do, which is my craft, my sport, MMA.
Yeah.
But outside of it, I just do like a normal strength program. I have a strength coach that I work with, and he caters my training towards myself and to the sport. Yeah. It's very hard. If you look at the science and literature behind it, it's very hard to connect the dots and make hard scientific connections between weightlifting and training. Like certain exercises I'm talking, there is a benefit to all sorts of like strength conditioning in it across every sport. But I do what feels good. You know, I like lifting certain weights. We like doing things in brackets. So like we do like a explosive bracket and then we do like a slow heavy bracket, yada, yada, yada. But it depends where I'm at, what I'm prepping for, what I'm dealing with. But I do have a strength coach and I work it that way.
Now, asking like being very ignorant in the situation, but I think when people, a lot of times anyways, think about, you know, moving weights and muscle building and stuff, they're thinking about hypertrophy and more the aesthetics of building muscle rather than actual strength. And, you know, doing exercises that actually lean themselves into working in MMA. You know what I mean? So I don't, like, is it true that you're not doing just like regular bicep curls or whatever it might be to build muscle, but you're doing exercises to actually make you stronger in the ring? You know what I mean?
No, like I literally, when I do my weights outside of camps, there's bicep curls in there. Like it's just normal bicep curls.
Yeah.
If you want to get faster at punching, you punch. You want to get better at lifting people, you lift people. Mm. The idea behind our strength programs is like you build muscle, but then the muscle's got to be catered towards your sport. So then you go work the muscle in your sport, in your craft.
Okay, fair enough. Well, those were all the questions. Anyway. Yeah, fair. Those were all the questions for episode 43 of the podcast. Rob, do you have any closing thoughts before we take a bit of a hiatus? While you go and fight Khamzat in overseas. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. I want to say thank you to all the subscribers, fans, and followers of the podcast and, you know, of the channel because, you know, it's you guys that fuel us doing this week in and week out. And I appreciate you guys, your patience in allowing me to take some time off to focus on the fight. Like I said, I'll try and feed you some updates and I look forward to coming back. So please do hit the like and subscribe button. Grow the channel for us and I'll see you in a few weeks.
Dude, good luck, brother. We hope it all goes well. And I'll try and keep you all updated, by the way, in the community tab. If I can make some videos on some, you know, fight nights and predictions and results, I'll try and do that. But let us know what you think in the comments below and we'll see you in the next episode.